Hello and welcome to Who Goes There, the biographical game that goes through history to look at the lives of the great and the good, the bad and the downright ugly. Joining regular team captain Francis Wheen today is writer and broadcaster Claire Rayner. And facing them are team captain Fred Housego, who's joined today by the self-described literary hack Roy Hattersley. Before we get going, just a note about the scoring. I'll award 2 points for a full and correct answer, 1 point for anything which is close, plus bonus points for outstanding guesswork. Let's move to round one. It's our archive round. We've collated some archive footage of the luminaries of the 20th century. All our panellists have to do is work out who those people are from the clips. Francis first. Who or what is the subject of this opinion from Martina Navratilova?
It's distracting in that when you don't hear the ball being struck, you depend on hearing the ball hit the racket. And you hear it first, then you see it. And when you can't hear it, that is difficult.
Francis, who was Martina talking about, do you think?
Well, I suppose she was talking about a deaf tennis player, was she?
No. Not at all, actually. About as far from the truth as it could be.
All right, she was talking about a tennis player with very good hearing who was, for some reason, unable to hear the racket hitting the ball. Roy knows the answer.
She's complaining that her opponent grunts.
Correct. Oh. Well done. And who was that opponent?
That's a very different question.
So only half well done, then.
What's her name? You know, the American.
Yes.
Not the little girl who had the long, lopy pieces of hair down here. And
No. God, it's like a question of sport, this.
Not Monica Sells.
You're right. All right. The thing in question was indeed grunting, and the person in question was Monica Seles. Although she was forced into a 2-year retirement after being very nastily attacked during a match, she returned and won the Australian Open, then led the US team in winning in the Federation Cup. Claire, who is describing their street cred here?
Don't for 1 minute imagine that we weren't with it when we were younger. In fact, I was so much with it that that was one of the big criticisms that was levelled against me by the older generation.
I wonder who that was.
Well, it must be, yes, of course. I didn't think his voice was as good as that, did we? Well, we think it might be Edward.
It is. It is Edward. Could be it.
And thin, nasty little voice. Oh, well.
It was Edward VIII. Although they had the love affair of the century, Edward and Wallace Simpson did argue like any other couple. However, he had an ace up his sleeve, as he once pointed out. It helps in a pinch to be able to remind your bride that you gave up a throne for her. Roy, who is having trouble with satirists here?
The people in my district were obviously bothered some by the political cartoons. Most of the political cartoons showed Little Shirley running for Congress. And this did have some effect, I'm sure, on some voters.
This is Shirley Temple, animal cracker in my soup, black.
Correct.
Who I saw when I first went to the cinema. And I couldn't understand why they employed her then, and I can't understand why they employed her now.
It was Shirley Temple. And while some children hope that they'll be film stars when they grow up, this once golden-haired cutie got all her acting over and done with by her teens so that she could grow up to become American ambassador to Czechoslovakia. So, Fred, who's enjoying the sound of silence here?
For me, silence is always eloquent. I mean that silence has to have a poetic quality, and the silence is never complete. You can find great music in silence.
This is not somebody who writes no music at all and passes it off as total silence on record, is it?
There are some people trying to get away with that, but no, it's not.
Right. It's obviously not Art Garfunkel.
Nope.
Silence. It's a
not unless Art Garfunkel was French and I never noticed that.
Not Sartre or something like that, is it?
No.
Well, we're doing wonderful over here so far. And,
that's more than he said in his entire career.
Marcel Dolly. Marceau.
Dolly. Marceau. Now, everyone knows it's good to talk. In our next round, I shall ask our panellists to identify which famous people are being talked about. First quote to Francis. At whom was Bob Hope directing the following witticism? I must say that the senator's victory in Wisconsin was a triumph for democracy. It proves that a millionaire has just as much chance as anyone else. Francis.
I thought originally it was going to be a joke about Senator McCarthy.
No, a little bit later than that.
But not he wasn't a millionaire as such.
He actually said he was taking up a collection in 64 to give the chance of a poor man getting into the White House, and then he was being a critical of John F. Kennedy's presidency. Would he have been critical of him when he was a senator before that?
Correct. It was John F. Kennedy. a bonus point there to Roy. It was after his election win in 1960 that Hope said that. But by the end of the 60s, Bob Hope found that he was the target of speculation on his own wealth while he was out entertaining the troops in Vietnam. His riposte was simply this. They said I was worth $500 million. If I was worth that much, I wouldn't have visited Vietnam. I'd have sent for it. Claire, of which turn of the century actress were these words written? Her voice was liquid gold. She spoke verse as the nightingale sings.
Well, who were the actresses? Mrs. Patrick Campbell comes to mind. Bernhardt's another. Which one are we going for? Bernhardt.
Yes! Well done.
Patrick Campbell is good too.
I thought you were going to go through the sort of spotlight directory for 1890.
Dussault was another, wasn't she?
Roy, let's turn to you. Who might be the subject of these quotations? She's something different to each man, blending somehow the thing he seems to require most. Next to her, Lucretia Borgia was a pussycat. Directing her was like directing Lassie. You need 14 takes to get each one of them right. I don't entirely understand that, but it's quite a good quote.
Marilyn Monroe.
You're right, well done. I love the idea of Marilyn Monroe because it reminds me of what President Mitterrand said about Margaret Thatcher. He said, she has the mouth of Marilyn Monroe and the eyes of Caligula. Now then, Fred, Ravel is well known for having composed Bolero, of course, but over whom is he losing his composure in this quote? He has informed a delighted public that since the war began, he has composed music for the stage, melodies, an elegy, and a piece for the trombone. If he'd been making shell cases instead, it might have been all the better for music.
How about this for an answer? I haven't got a clue.
Let me give you a clue.
Thank you.
His most famous work was distinctly macabre.
Dance macabre.
Chanson.
Correct, Sanson. Oh. 1 point for that, because I gave a big clue.
Ravel said something absolutely stupendous to the great George Gershwin, who went to study under him in Paris. And Gershwin stayed working away with him for about a year, and then Ravel said to him, why do you want to be a second-rate Ravel when you can be a first-rate Gershwin? The moral to us all, you know.
Excellent. What a good quote. Let's have a look at the scores. And we've got Francis and Claire on 5, but Fred and Roy are on 7.5. Throughout history, some people have felt that the only way they'll get to the top is by taking on an interesting alias. This round aims to uncover the truth behind some very famous pseudonyms. So, Francis, how is Josip Broz better remembered?
Well, he was better remembered as Tito.
Yes! Very quick. It was as President Tito of Yugoslavia. He took the name Tito in 1934 when he joined the Yugoslavian Communist Party Politburo, and after the Second World War, he decided to keep it as his legal surname. Claire, Rodrigo Diaz de Viva became a legend in his own lifetime, but under another name. What was that?
This wasn't Che, was it?
No. Earlier. Rodrigo Diaz de Viva.
My colleague thinks it might have been Salvador Dali.
No. Any other goes before we put it over the other side?
Just a minute. What, have we got a date for this man?
We don't do dates.
I will give you a clue then.
We don't do dates.
We know.
They know over that side.
We know it so easy.
So easy.
Oh, all right. Go on then. Nobody likes a clever dick.
El Cid.
Yes, that's right.
I saw the film.
I saw the film. It is El Cid, and even that name's a shortened version of the title the Spanish gave him, which was El Cid Campeador, which means the Lord who wins battles. Roy, if you bumped into Michael Dumble Smith, who would you be looking at?
No idea.
He might, you know, break something up, demolish something, and he might even then make a song and dance about it.
Break something up and make a dance, oh, song and dance,
dance about it.
Can't we, Fred Astaire? That's ours to let.
I think we've got to, unless the other side have an idea who Michael Dumble Smith is. Go on, go for it.
Well, no, I don't think it is. It can't be Michael Flatley, can it?
Nope.
No, it's not.
Nope, we're going to have to stop that one there. It is Michael Crawford.
Good heavens.
I wonder why he changed his name.
Well, he sensibly decided to do so. Although, given the fact that he gained fame, of course, as Frank Spencer, Dumble was rather apt. Fred, if you were a European living in the 5th century AD, who would you be running away from if the scourge of God was on your tail?
Don't tell me Thatcher had an ancestor.
I could say that.
Attila the Hun.
Yes, it is Attila the Hun. And we'll scrub the bit about Margaret Thatcher from the record,
shall we? Called her Attila the Hen. Someone actually did, didn't they? That was
Norman St. John Stevens, I thought. Who came up with that. No, he called her the Blessed Margaret.
That's right, the Blessed Margaret.
Yes, no, it was Julian Critchley.
Julian Critchley, wasn't it?
He called her the Great She-Elephant, as well.
Yeah. He and his people ravaged Europe and defeated the Emperor Theodosius. The only reason they didn't capture Constantinople was because they knew nothing about siege warfare, while the only reason they didn't overrun Rome in 452 AD was because they were bribed to stay away by Pope Leo I. Our next round is entitled Curriculum Vitae. We've put together some unorthodox CVs detailing the less well-known facts from the lives of four famous luminaries. All our panelists have to do is identify the person from the description. I shall read each of you four facts. The sooner you answer, the more points you'll get. Francis. This man was born in 1857. But since his parents were leading Polish patriots in the Ukraine, the family was exiled to Vologda when he was 4. By the time he was 11, he was an orphan and he had to live with his uncle. He went to sea when he was 16.
Joseph Conrad.
Yes, how very bright. It is Joseph Conrad. Well done.
When Michael Falk was leader of their party, he told the Shadow Cabinet we ought to behave like a character out of Typhoon. Straight into the waves, Mr. Midshipman, straight into the waves. And Neil Kinnock said to him, what happened? Michael said, the boat sank.
Prophetic words at the time. Claire. This man was born in 1875 and was abandoned in Greenwich when he was only 9 days old. However, he was saved and brought up by a Billingsgate fish porter. In his early life, he was variously a printer, shoe shop assistant, rubber factory worker, merchant seaman, plasterer, milk delivery boy and soldier in South Africa, before becoming a correspondent for Reuters covering the Boer War.
Boer War. Keep going.
Okay. Once he'd made the break into journalism, he combined it with a prolific writing career. Now, listen to this. He wrote nearly 95 novels. Presumably he died in the 95th. It says nearly. 65 short stories, 41 plays and screenplays, 4 volumes of verse, 3 autobiographies, and a 10-volume history of World War I.
Fred knows.
Just hang on a second. Let's just give him one more chance, Fred, and then we'll try.
Claire's going to tell you that it's not H.G. Wells. She just wanted to make that clear.
That's correct.
It's not H.G. Wells. I wondered about Edgar Allan Poe, oddly enough, but probably
No, I thought about that too, but it's not him.
Edgar Wallace.
Yes. Oh, I did it.
You missed out the bit he sold newspapers. On the corner of Fleet Street and Ludgate Circus. They've got a little plaque up there. Edgar Wallace sold newspapers there.
It was Edgar Wallace. Critical acclaim never interested him. He instead aimed his material at a wide audience, once saying, what is a highbrow? It is a man who has found something more interesting than women. Roy, see if you can work out whose CV this is. She was born in 1893 in West End, New Jersey. Her father was a clothes salesman, and her mother died when she was 7. When her father remarried, she refused to talk to her stepmother. Her formal education ended when she was 14, but she was an avid reader and decided that she wanted to make her mark in literature. By 1916, her career had started writing captions for fashion photographs and drawings in Vogue magazine.
We think it's Dorothy Parker.
Yes, well done. Fred, he was the son of an iron merchant and was born in Bristol in 1891, joined the army on the outbreak of the First World War, serving at Gallipoli, where he was wounded. He served on the Western Front and then in Mesopotamia, where he was wounded again and awarded the Military Cross. In 1920, he was granted a regular commission and transferred to the 6th Gurkha Rifles. Although he became commandant of the Senior Officers' School in India, he found it difficult to survive on his pay and had to supplement his income by writing for magazines under an assumed name.
Not Montgomery, is it?
Nope.
No.
At the start of World War II, he commanded the 10th Indian Division in Syria, Wavell. Iraq.
Is this Wavell?
No.
But it's Slim.
It's Slim. Well done. Very difficult, that. The sort of names that anybody would have come up with there. But it was Viscount Slim, the first Viscount Slim, William Joseph. As an ex-ranker who had worked his way up to a general, his troops had a great affection for him. They knew him simply as Uncle Bill. Let's have a look at the scores yet again. Oh, and exciting they are. Francis and Claire have 13, but Fred and Roy are leaping ahead with 18 and a half. Shakespeare once described music as the food of love, but in our next round it's going to be food for thought. This is our music round. We'll play our panellists pieces of music, and all they need to do is identify who it's dedicated to, who inspired it, or what connection certain people have to it. Francis, who is this about?
She's like a child staring at her feet. But when she passed the ball and she heard the music play, she had to go in and sing. It had to be that way.
Is it Nico, perhaps?
No.
Well, it's one of those New York transvestite-type figures that Lou Reed used to hang out with.
It's Lou Reed, that's absolutely right.
It's
Who is he talking about?
I mean, unless he's making a little joke and singing about Andy Warhol but pretending he's a woman.
Go back a bit.
Go back?
Anybody else know who he's singing about, Lou Reed is singing about? Well, the clue says her name is similar to a fortnight in Ibiza, but I don't know if I tell you that.
You mean Package Holiday, the famous...
Yes, that's right, Betty Package Holiday. You've got it right.
Well, there are. That's...
And hyphenated too.
Nope, I have to tell you, that was about the jazz singer Billie Holiday. And the song was Lady Day by Lou Reed. Claire, would you please listen to this? Play the rest of that, or shall I ask you a question?
No, it's Mozart. I mean, it's Don Giovanni.
I can't remember.
It.
Absolutely right. Who, apart from Mozart, obviously, links that opera with Così fan tutte and The Marriage of Figaro?
Well,
did they have the same librettist?
Yes.
The same,
yes.
De Ponte.
Yes. Thank you. Very good.
I thought he was married to, what's her name, Sophia Loren, Carlo Di Ponte.
Yeah. He's got bridges after him all over the country.
Di Ponte had been appointed poet to the Imperial Theatres in Vienna, and he wrote for Gazzaniga and Salieri. But his greatest work was with Mozart on Don Giovanni, Così fan tutte, and The Marriage of Figaro. However, he very nearly didn't become a librettist because he studied for the priesthood. For a bonus point, can you tell me what saved him from the priesthood?
Women.
Right, yes, a bonus point. I mean, not the greatest piece of deduction you've been asked to make, but you're right. He was expelled from the seminary for adultery. Even when he was famous, his luck didn't change, as he was expelled from Vienna in 1791 after annoying the emperor. Then in 1805, he fled from Europe to America because of debt. Roy, have a listen to this.
Plagiarize. Let no one else's work evagerize. Remember why the good Lord made your eyes, so don't shade your eyes, but plagiarize, plagiarize, plagiarize. Only be sure always to call it, please, research. And ever since I meet this man, my life is not the same. And Nikolai Ivanovich Lobachevsky is his name.
Now, Nikolai Ivanovich Lobachevsky may be one of our more obscure subjects, and he does scan rather beautifully in that song. But if you can identify the singer, you may be able to guess why Lobachevsky was of interest to him.
Well, it's Tom Lehrer.
Yes, that's right.
I can think of two things about Tom Lehrer. One is a song called Poisoning the Pigeons in
wonderful.
The Park.
Absolutely yes. Wonderful.
Admirable occupation. The other, he was involved in drugs and got into trouble for it. Are we getting warm?
He was a mathematician.
Fred is getting warm.
He was a mathematician, said
so
Fred.
I suppose the other Herbert was Cramer's come up with the theory of relativity and he didn't like it.
You're absolutely right. Well done.
Professor, yes.
I think between the two of you, you definitely got the 2 points there. He was a famed Harvard mathematics professor and satirical songwriter. Lobachevsky was an early 19th century Russian mathematician, one of the founders of non-Euclidean geometry, in which more than one line parallel to a given line is allowed, and the interior angles of a triangle never add up to 180 degrees.
Never.
In other words, a branch of geometry in which nothing's geometric. Finally, Fred, have a listen to this. That was Pandora's Box by Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. Which silent movie star inspired the song?
Valentino?
Nope.
I thought when he said Kansas, it was all about Dorothy and the Yellow Brick Road, but...
Nope.
We know.
We'll turn
Louise
it over
Brooks.
To Claire.
Louise Brooks had a wonderful... That bounce.
Helmet.
She looked wonderful.
It was Tony, indeed, Louise
there was
Brooks.
A very sad,
well done, Claire.
Yeah, there was a very sad outcome. I can't remember who it was, but somebody tracked her down in the 50s.
Kenneth Tynan tracked her down.
Was it Kenneth Tynan?
He
found her living in poverty.
Yeah,
that was
wrote
it.
A big piece about her.
She wrote a huge piece. It was one of the saddest things I'd ever read. That she was living in great poverty in somewhere in New Jersey or somewhere of that nature.
Now, for some people, fame is eternal, but for others, it's a fleeting experience where even 15 minutes seems like a long time. So our next round is called Claim to Fame, and it celebrates these historical flashes in the pan. Francis, how has Sid Dernley staked his claim to fame? Sid Dernley. Now, he wasn't an Indian. The name would rather tend to give that away. But he did have some interesting rope tricks.
Did he, by Jove?
Sid Dernley.
Rope tricks? I mean, was he an escapologist, something of that sort?
No,
not
much
that
more
sort of
sinister.
Rope. More sinister?
Oh, yes, quite.
With ropes?
We know.
Was he a murderer? This wasn't the real name of Albert Pierpont or someone like that, was
You're
it?
You're in the right neck of the woods.
Albert Pierpont.
1 point for getting Albert Pierpont.
But it's not the right answer, you see.
Well, it is half the right answer. That's why you get 1 point.
Was
Britain's last executioner. And he died in 1994 and left no apprentice to take over the job.
And
he was apprentice hangman to Albert Pierpont.
He became a pub landlord in his older days, old Pierpont. He ran a pub called The Last Drop, rather tasteless thing.
I think that's worth a point. It's rather unpleasant, but it's worth a point.
Wasn't there a sign up in the bar? The story, guys, is apocryphal, I'm sure, that said no hanging around the bar.
Claire, how did the mother of Colonel Paul W. Tibbetts enter history? The mother of Colonel Paul
Tibbetts.
Ready to go here.
Fred's firing on all cylinders over there.
Is he? Well, you keep quiet for
now. All right.
His mother. Oh, look, this wasn't the woman who sewed the flag. The mother. Was this the woman who sewed the flag for the Americans?
That's Betsy Ross.
No. I'm going to hand it over to Mr. House.
They've done it again.
Company.
Dropped the first A-bomb, and the aeroplane, the B-29, was called the Enola Gay.
Oh, that's...
Yes! Well done. So the mother of Colonel Paul W. Tibbets was
Enola Gay.
Very good. The plane that dropped the world's first atomic bomb was named after her. Much has been said about the atom bomb since it was first dropped, but one of the best pieces of advice came from a contributor to the British Army Journal in 1949. The best defence against the atom bomb is not to be there when it goes off. Roy, what phrase did the French soldier Alfred Dreyfus give the world in 1898?
Well, he didn't quite give it, did he? It was Jacques's.
It was indeed.
But it was not said by him, but said on his behalf. And it's the complaint that he was wrongly convicted and sent to Devil's Island when really somebody else... somebody else had done it.
Emile Zola.
Zola said it, and it was a Hungarian officer who was doing all the...
It was Esterhazy. Esterhazy.
Yeah. Very good. Well, comprehensive stuff. Well done. So, Fred, why might Mercedes McCambridge's claim to fame give you nightmares? Mercedes McCambridge.
This is not Nightmare on Elm Street. I know she's an actress,
getting warm, as they say.
Oh, wait a minute, not Friday the 13th.
Psycho.
Is it? No, Psycho is, that was Janet Leigh.
She made life hellish for cinema goers in 1973.
Was it the person who played Carrie?
All that green vomit stuff.
You're getting everyone well, except
the Exorcist.
The Exorcist, very good.
Directed by William Peter Pan, that one.
It was The Exorcist, you're quite right. She played the voice of the demon in The Exorcist. That brings us to the end of the show, and it could not be closer. Let's look at the final scores. Francis and Claire have 25, but Fred and Roy have 25 and a half.
Oh, Claire.
Well done. You've all worked very hard on some really quite difficult questions there. That just leaves me to thank our panellists, Francis Wheen, Claire Rayner, Roy Hattersley and Fred Housegoe.
Who Goes There was produced by Alid Evans,